guarantees active participation. It guarantees the protection of our human rights as citizens. It guarantees the rule of law. The democratic values of democracy are about making informed choices through engaging in open dialogue and debate, accessing relevant and objective information, and seeing that feeling safe and making free decisions without being coerced or harmed. They're the values of democracy. Democratic principles, yes, it's working, respect diversity in a common civilization. Those principles value citizens' equal powers and rights to participate and protects all forms of our human rights. It's not something we should give away at in any sense at all. Now, the particular version of democracy we have, representative democracy, works in a particular way. It works by separating the power to make decisions from contributing to decision-making processes. And the power to make decisions is reserved to elected representatives, including those from Te Arawa. Elected representatives are held accountable for making decisions in the public interest. Now, citizens and collectives also have the right to contribute advice to elected representatives, but that contribution must be assisted and be seen to be fair and effective. So the test of effective representative democracy is not the extent to which it satisfies the preferences of one interest group, but the extent to which it reconciles the different preferences of many interest groups in a diverse community. This brings me to option 5, the democratic governance model proposed by our society. The first building block of democratic governance must be a council, a mayor and 12 councillors elected by the people, including mana whenua, who make policy and planning decisions. It's therefore regarded as fair. This council of elected representatives, including Te Arawa-affiliated councillors, swear an oath that they will make decisions in the public good. And they currently do this using a structure of standing committees to debate and make preliminary decisions that are ratified by the whole of council. Their greatest challenge, we understand this, is to take the views of individuals, experts and collectives into account and then to reconcile the different preferences of many interest groups in our diverse community. So we recommend starting with mana whenua because they have unique responsibilities under the RMA Act. But unlike the partnership plan, we want to suggest a fairer way of balancing their interests against the broader interests of tangata whenua and then with the other interest groups in our community. So we recommend a Māori Policy Advisory Board provide input and advise council and standing committees on all planning and policy issues of interest to Māori. This board should set its own agendas and be respected as the authoritative voice of Māoridom. It would comprise, we suggest, unsalaried elected volunteers who'd be supported with attendance fees and expenses. We want to ensure that no one's excluded from participation or disadvantaged by participating without it becoming a gravy train. Representation and procedures within that council would need to be determined by Māoridom. They'd have to reconcile tikanga Māori with tikanga democracy. It's a tough call, but it's not beyond our people. To ensure effective communications through the council, we recommend the active support of a councillor and a dedicated council administrator. And we suggest that this Māori Policy Advisory Board learn from the many successes in the past of the Te Arawa Standing Committee. There's a rich history there worth understanding. If asked, we can suggest methods of balancing mana whenua responsibilities with the democratic rights of all Māori in the district. Now, similarly, we recommend a Community Policy Advisory Board to advise council and standing committees on all planning and policy issues of interest to the broader community. They too must be able to set their own agendas. It would comprise unsalaried elected volunteers with the same fees and expenses. We don't want any exclusion or disadvantage by participation, and we certainly don't want to create another gravy train. So representation and procedures, we believe, should cohere with democratic principles. Again, we recommend the active support by a councillor and a dedicated council administrator. We suggest this Community Policy Advisory Board learn from the successes of some of our existing boards, like the Lakes Community Board, and draw representation from this and the other large interest groups, such as the ratepayers, Great Power, across the sectors. In addition to the two major policy advisory boards, we recommend that individuals and smaller interest groups are given safeguarded access and opportunities to contribute to council's decision-making processes. Facilitating this input to policy and planning decision-making processes from all of these large and small interest groups and individuals is absolutely vital to public confidence in democratic governance, and we believe that's been damaged, but can be repaired. Finally, we recommend that officials' expert input should be recognised as an essential contribution to council's decision-making processes, particularly through invited advice, polling, reports, and in particular, commissioned research. So in sum, the model before you of democratic governance is suitable for our unique context because at the one time it does a number of things. It reserves decision-making power to elected representatives who make decisions in the public interest and account to the people. It retains the power of council standing committees to consult and co-opt those with demonstrable expertise. It creates a Māori Policy Advisory Board to provide authoritative advice to council on policy and planning issues of interest to Māori. It creates a Community Policy Advisory Board to advise council on policy and planning issues of interest to the larger community interest groups. Finally, it ensures that the smaller interest groups, individuals and expert officials contribute effectively to decision-making processes before decisions are made solely by councillors. So with respect, Madam Chair and councillors, on these moral grounds, we ask you to adopt option 5 as a way of balancing interests, including mana whenua, and making decisions in the public good and in our diverse community, because democracy is our birthright and it guarantees the quality of our society. Kia ora. Is there time for questions?
There isn't, but there may be after your next submission, there may be prompts that people want to ask. That was 10 minutes. Your timing was immaculate.
Thank you very much.
Do you want to segue into your own personal submission now?
Good, good. I've never before been described as immaculate, but I'll accept that. Thank you. Now, we now turn to what the people want. In this presentation, I switch from moral analysis to political analysis. Political analysis suitable for a democratic society. Because if it is going to be... This is my second 10 minutes. Can you possibly explain to my colleague?
We've all agreed. One submission was from the Pro-Democracy Society. The next submission was from Mr. McPherson as an individual. Do carry on.
Thank you very much. The question is, if it's to be kawanatanga, o te tangata, mai te tangata, mō te tangata, we need to begin to understand with what the people want. Now, there's not a lot of data. It's pretty thin stuff. But we do know that the people were polarised by the Hovell Report. 70 letters were published in the period from early May until late July 2014. 44%, that 66%, rejected the proposed partnership model. Why did they reject it? Well, my analysis shows that the writers referred to these explanations. They were against race-based privileges, a biased and predetermined policy process, a divisive politics of ethnicity, giving unelected people power over fellow citizens that was going to corrupt representative democracy, and finally, the reallocation of power and the probable costs were not justified to the ratepayers. Now, those that supported the partnership model used particular arguments to do so. 24, that is 34%, they argued along these lines. They referred to guarantees of Māori sovereignty and partnership, past and present contributions, representation to reflect new entities and economic power, the Mayor's prior commitments, the Environmental Court judgment, and the gaining of no dividends from democracy. There we are. Now, instead of arbitrating these claims, what we can do is agree that the Hovell Report polarised people into two sharp groups, two-thirds against, one-third for the partnership proposal. When the Tahana report was tabled on the 18th December, Council decided on an 8-5 vote to approve the partnership plan, in principle, pending a special consultative procedure. Now, there were a total of 56 articles and letters published between that date and the end of January this year. The 10 publications in support of the Tahana report emphasised the need for better Māori representation and separate Māori representation, and that democracy was part of racist colonisation. Individuals argued that the proposals reflected a year of consultations with Te Arawa, they met legal obligations to engage Māori, they were justified by the size of the Mayor's majority, reflected the need for greater social justice, and that some correspondents were raising unreasonable fears. Conversely, the 46 articles and letters that opposed the partnership plan in the same period stressed the undemocratic nature of the plan, especially that unelected people would be given power over fellow citizens. A growing feature of the resistance was concern over the poor quality of policy making, the biased processes with predetermined outcomes. The other dimensions of resistance were about the socially divisive impact of a politics of ethnicity, no public consultation at that point, risks to ratepayers, and how ideological preferences and political promises appear to have far exceeded legal obligations. Overall, in summary, to this point, the people's resistance to the partnership plan had hardened to about 82% by the end of January 2015. Now we turn to the petitions. And I have here this morning another 343 petitions, signatures that have been added to the lists. I seem to have turned an extra page. Briefly, the petition that was signed that indicated, asked the Council not to implement Te Arawa Partnership Plan options 2 or 3 because they're undemocratic. Today there are 12 people have signed that. The online petition requesting that the Council adopt a democratic governance model today has reached 266. In fact, that's gone up a little past that point. We've now got to the point where we have got 17 signatures under the 5% needed were we requesting a referendum, if we were in the situation of requesting Māori seats. So there's a political benchmark has been achieved through these petitions. Finally, I move to the data available from the submissions. The word is that something in the region of 56% are saying yes to the first question of the feedback form. The question, recall, was, do you support in principle the intention to effectively partner with Te Arawa? Another 42% said no. Now, why? The reason is that the question was a vague, feel-good platitude intended to maximise a positive response, but it didn't work. Instead, it divided the people. A small majority either actively or intuitively supported the platitude, but over 40% rejected it, probably because they recognised it intended to ingratiate the partnership model. One of our members emailed me this morning and she said, having read the submissions, there are many who have been tricked into answering yes in the first question, followed by their reasoning why they now disagree with the proposal. There's got to be a distinction made between that platitudinous first question and the responses to the other part of that submission feedback form. The key point here is that the people were not asked directly, do you support the Te Arawa partnership model? And the evidence from the petitions and from the published public comment suggests that an answer to this much more honest question, blunt question, would have been very, very different. But what we can conclude at this point, councillors and mayor, is that the people are deeply divided. Even in principle, they're divided about the council partnering just with Te Arawa. In the submission form, the people were then asked what aspects of the partnership plan they agreed with and why they disagreed with it. Now, the intention here appears to be to identify sources of support and resistance to the plan in order to devise implementation strategies, whatever the actual level of public support, which we don't know. In my view, the feedback form was biased in favour of a predetermined outcome, option two, with option three as a fallback position to trade off voting rights temporarily to get option two by stealth. I don't like that sort of thing at all. The raw data and the preliminary summaries of what the people said in their submissions were made available online as PDFs, which prevented deeper analysis. This denied me, I believe, what I have as a democratic right to freedom of information by officials who want to control the analysis. My point here is this is an unsound approach and a divisive approach to policy making, and it's divided the people when it should have generated fresh governance policy with a broad base of support. More broadly, what did the people say during the special consultative process? Well, the SPC did not consult the people on the four options as promised in any meaningful sense at all, nor did it admit option five until today. The so-called information sessions were push marketing options two and three by the partners. The people were not asked by the feedback form to indicate the extent to which they actually supported each of the four, now five, options. We just don't know. The conclusion that I draw from this is that the process has been corrupted by attempts to generate support for the partnership plan and to plan for its implementation. That was the wrong purpose. The implication is that the special consultative process has not produced trustworthy evidence needed by Your Worship and the councillors about what the people want before making fundamental changes to our governance. Now, there seems to be three options, and they'll conclude. Madam Chair and councillors, you can do, I think, one of three things, but the predictable consequences are quite clear. You can reject the data that indicate implacable and growing resistance by the people. You can ram through a change, and you're going to have to endure a politics of regime change. Secondly, you can game the data, the submissions data. You can evade the moral ideals of democracy, and you can fudge the doubtful legality of the partnership plan and risk a judicial review. Or third, you can accept, and this is crucial, the people are deeply divided by the partnership plan. Please consider deferring making any decision until a broad consensus has emerged, and then towards that end, that you refer all five options to the local government representation review with a view to fresh, democratic and an effective policy settlement. I, of course, would prefer the third option because it will gradually restore your political fortunes, and you deserve success. You've had some emergent successes elsewhere. You deserve that reward. But also, such a process would revitalise capacity building, democratic capacity building in our community, and allow me to drift back into political obscurity. As a grandfather, I would vastly prefer that latter option. Nō reira hou mā, ngā mihi nā, kia ora tātou. Oh no, we don't.
Just all refrain from applauding, but thank you for that very clear submission. There is no time for questions, but we've got Mrs. McKenzie has arrived, and so we did say we would keep to time. But thank you for that submission.
Kia ora.
Now that the microphone's fixed, is there any chance of redoing some of the earlier presentations?
Not at all. No, we don't have time. We have 5 days of submissions,
okay,
so
we resubmit our
no, I. No, I'm sorry, Rangi Māori. The process was very clear, and they will be on the public record, every submission. Mrs. McKenzie, would you like to come to the table, please? D5 for councillors, and welcome to the table.
Good morning, Bishop. Good morning, councillors. I will, with your approval, read what I have written, and there will be a copy of this for each of you. And at the outset, I must say that I am here in a private capacity, not that of a a special interest group, shall we say. My opposition to the Te Arawa Partnership Plan is because I believe all New Zealanders have an equal opportunity to be involved in the governance of their local authority. People are elected by the citizens of their community because those citizens believe the candidates have the requisite skills to govern wisely. While this process may not be perfect, it is the best we have. It is called democracy. While agreeing there needs to be a formal process for consultation with Te Arawa, I do not believe that unelected representatives on the two standing committees of our council, plus other appointments as are contained in the plan, is appropriate. It is undemocratic. The proposed Te Arawa Partnership Plan gives disproportionate representation to a minority of Rotorua citizens and gives them special privilege. New Zealanders have a proud history of opposing privilege. It was not allowed to be established when New Zealand was settled by immigrants from Britain, nor should it be allowed to be established by immigrants from Hawaii, no matter when they arrived. It is a divisive policy and has not only divided Te Arawa and residents of other ethnicities, but has divided Te Arawa and Māori from other iwi who have chosen to make this city their home. It is creating even more concern among newer citizens who have chosen to live here as a safe haven from what is often undemocratic behaviours in their homelands. The separate Te Arawa board being mooted is a form of apartheid and morally and ethically wrong. We can forgive the young for not remembering the political system which operated in South Africa for so many years, but I believe that most of you would be of an age that you would remember all too well how this country expressed its objections to that regime. It is not the business of local bodies to right the wrongs of the past, and as a student of history, I'm aware that the wrongdoing was not confined to non-Māori. The promulgation of the laws of our country belong with central government, and while it has been obvious in the past, council in Rotorua has fallen short in consulting with its citizens on a variety of issues, going overboard to placate one aggrieved party will not succeed. I believe the costs of the Te Arawa Council, given its makeup, has been grossly understated in order to allay the fears of those who see the council already living beyond its means. Council is currently engaging in the process with senior citizens who call Rotorua home. There has been a great deal of goodwill and interest from many who see the opportunity to make things better for all who live here, and a chance to give back to society for the benefits we have enjoyed in the past. Should these negotiations result in the form of a seniors board, there will be no thought of remuneration for dealing with the business, nor will we expect to employ a CEO. We will expect contact with councillors and staff, but the input from a seniors board would be purely voluntary, as should that from Te Arawa. Our council is fortunate in having among its number good representation from Te Arawa in the duly elected hard-working councillors we have today. These councillors were elected on merit by the whole population, as they should be, because they have skills to offer. I can sympathise with the young. They're all impatient and nothing ever comes fast enough, but there is a process available, and that is obvious, as Councillor Tapsell amply demonstrates. Council needs to tread warily and be very sure that the policies they are promoting are all-inclusive. We cannot allow one special interest group to dominate our deliberations. Therefore, it behoves Council to consider a much more community-wide consultative organisation that is made up from all interest groups who wish to offer wise guidance to forward the endeavours of the council to make Rotorua the best place to live. Thomas Jefferson once said, "No man is good enough to govern another man without that man's consent." The Te Arawa Plan, options 2 and 3, do not have my consent.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Do we have any questions? There appear to be no questions. Thank you. It must have been so succinct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now, I wonder, in the interests of time, there may be a submitter that is sitting amongst us who's quite happy to come forward because we were to close for lunch, but we do have 20 minutes. So any submitter who is here who feels comfortable, because often you're prepared for the timing. If not, we'll break now. Is there a submitter that after lunch... Are you happy to come forward?
Yes, good.
Great. Wonderful, John. Do come forward. That's perfect. That's submission number 51, page 31. Lovely that you could speak now.
Very good. You might have a long lunch then.
Yeah, not really. I'll call them back.
Now, you'll be the happy recipients of my once-in-a-10-year speech.
Excuse me. I'll push it.
Okay. Here we are. Thank you. That's better. Now, this... controversy in town, which has been touched upon, as I just heard, is not good for the town and it's not good for the people in this town. And when I first heard of it, quite some time ago, I went back to the basics. And I thought, how does a councillor get there? Because I'm not very versed in politics. So I imagine a councillor to be there where you're sitting would have to go through a lot of effort to get there. They would have to extend their knowledge of people and their approval far beyond their family and far beyond their friends, and they would have to be outgoing, have certain qualities. They would have to be able to make a speech. They would in short, they would have very good qualities to be there. Then, if they have those qualities, they have to mount an election campaign, go through a lot of trouble, a lot more hard work, and then they may be successful. It's like what my mother used to say. Say, yeah. She said, you correct nothing, niets for niets. Alles heeft een hoop input nodig. And the translation of that is that in order to achieve anything, you'll have to do a lot of work. And that's what the councillors have done. That's why they're here, to make decisions on anything that might crop up, that is the rates or the policies or whatever might be of importance to the community. So what does a councillor do then? That's another basics. Well, they have to be on committees, as I see it. They have to consult. There may be people coming to them who say you should do this and that and the other thing. But in the end, it's the councillors who bear the responsibility to the people of Rotorua to make decisions for Rotorua in everybody's interest. That is their job. Now, I have studied the proposal, and Yes, it is good to get better representation from Māoridom, perhaps to have the ability to talk to the councillors and make their point of view known. But this proposal goes much further. It also allows the Te Arawa Trust Board to be on the committees and have voting powers as well. And what staggered me was that councillors agreed to, in principle, dilute their own powers in order to give unelected people committee rights and voting rights. Clearly, that is not why the councillors were elected. It just doesn't make sense to me whatsoever, because it goes against all democratic principles as I know them. It's clearly a backdoor entry. And as you've heard, it creates a lot of division in the community, which shouldn't be there in the first place. If the Te Arawa Trust Board has that much support of the people, why don't they make the effort to get on the council? Surely, with the huge number of Te Arawa people here, if they are truly the representatives of the Te Arawa people, then there shouldn't be any problem at all to be councillors and thereby have voting rights and committee rights and everything else which comes with it. But this backdoor entry doesn't make sense to me. I can't get my head around it. And I felt it necessary to sit here today and make my views known. So I think anybody would welcome good communication between Māori people and the rest of society, if you like, but to adopt an undemocratic system is a step on the slippery slope to corruption, as so evident in so many other countries. And I just don't agree with it. That's all.
Do we have any questions, Councillor Sturt?
For your submission, I appreciate the effort you've gone into coming here today. I just want to get a handle on where you're actually coming from, because on one hand you said that you believe there should be consultation with Māori. So do you think it's a bridge too far in this proposal to give voting rights? Do
you Absolutely,
think
yes.
But you're quite happy that we consult and talk, but you believe that giving a vote is a bridge too far?
Like everybody else, everybody has the right to approach council or councillors or the mayor and make their point of view known. You know, even as a community, like the retired people or the people like the Te Arawa Trust Board, yes, they all have the right to make their views known. And I know that the government has given Māori perhaps a foot in the door by stipulating that there should be better consultation. Now, consultation, and I just heard this gentleman there speak, consultation, the way he proposed, would seem to me quite adequate and would give anybody the opportunity to make their points of view known, but not to have committee sitting right whereby the decisions have to be made. And I don't think unelected people should have the voting right.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We do have time for one more, if anyone was prepared. If not, we're quite happy to go to the time that you were scheduled. No, we're not. Everybody gets their fair share here. Thank you. All right, there appears to be nobody else, so we will now suspend the hearings for lunch, and we will be back at 12:40. Thank you, everybody. Till they all reconvene. We don't really start till 22, which is in a couple of minutes. Well, it is 12:40 apparently, so if I say good afternoon and welcome to those new submitters, we've had a very thought-provoking morning for us all. And for those that are going to speak, those at the back in the gallery love to hear you. So can you bring the microphone quite close to your mouth so that they can hear? And because they appreciate feeling part of this too. So we now get to, we're really 10 minutes ahead of schedule. But Brian, you are here. Would you like to come to the microphone because the speaker before you spoke before lunch? So you're away. And for us, it's page 33.
Well, I'm not much of a speaker, and all I've done is made notes on this proposal. On this Rotorua District Te Aroha Partnership proposal, I've just gone through the items, executive summary. The need to develop a new partnership model was identified by both the council and Te Aroha soon after the 2013 elections. What I can't understand, the TASC model was innovative when it was introduced and has worked for so many years, all of a sudden it's no good. That doesn't make sense. It's up to the council to make it work. And then to turn around us, the rest of it, the TASC model meets all government requirements. They don't require anything more. But all this is introducing as though it's aimed at kidding people that the government is after more. They're not. The TASC model has worked for so many years, all of a sudden it's no good. Why? At the meetings that have been going around, which I attended a few, all the people that were on the Te Aroha committee, they all stated that all they wanted was what's good for Rotorua. Well, that's what we all want. And surely that's what the council's here for. So why do they need more? They've got enough representation on the council as it is. You know? The other thing is, the council say that they can change this at any time. But once you start this, it'll be there for good. And it'll be incumbent on the next elected council. You won't be able to get rid of it. So I can't see where Meriden needs more power on the council. They're already represented. If they want more, get them elected. Unelected people on the council decision making is totally undemocratic. That's all I've got to say.
And very clear. So we can ask questions if anybody wishes to ask a question. Councillor Gould.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Brian, for your submission. On our page 33, it said, is there another option arrangement? You said, I would consider the modified model. Would you consider other models which came through, or do you just consider the modified model?
I would consider the modified model.
The response was, for those that couldn't hear, he would consider a modified model. Thank you, Brian. Councillor Sturt, if you feel more comfortable, come back to your chair.
Thank you. Is it on? Oh, yeah. Thank you, Brian. I take from your submission that you actually support the status quo, the current committee.
Yes.
Make it more effective and make it work.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.